Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, October 24th, 2018. Coming up this hour,
U.S. futures signal the equity sell-offs not over yet.
President Trump ramps up his attack on the Fed.
European banks report earnings. We are live in London with results.
And a highly anticipated report from Tesla has some predicting a profit.
Saudi Prince Salman will give a speech for the first time since the death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Plus, President Trump and Vladimir Putin plan to meet next month. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Red Sox beat the Dodgers in Game 1 of the World Series. The Rangers with a home win over Florida.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
It is shaping up to be another volatile session with U.S. futures falling and the VIX trading above 20. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 26 points, Dow futures down 221, and NASDAQ futures down 84. The DAX in Germany, little change. CAC in Paris up 0.3%. FTSE 100 up 0.25%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.4%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was down 0.4%. 10-year Treasury up 11/32nds, yield 3.12%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.86%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.4% or 27 cents to $66.16 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.25% or $3.30 to $12.33.50 an ounce. The euro, $1.14.16, the yen, 112.47. And this update brought to you by PGIM and the search for Alpha. Partner with PGIM, the global investment management business of Prudential Financial, Inc. Nathan.
Karen, let's begin with today's trading in Asia, where it was another volatile session dominated by moves in Chinese markets. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally has more from Singapore.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The CSI 300 closed only marginally higher after earlier rallying on optimism of more state-based stimulus and liquidity. That optimism had fueled a rally in other markets and saw commodity currencies like the Aussie gain while the yen fell, but it ran out of steam in late trade. Hong Kong's Hang Seng index tipped back into negative territory in the afternoon session. Japan's Nikkei index was boosted by that weaker yen, finishing higher in Tokyo by 0.4%, but tech stocks fell after bellwether Texas Instruments reported third-quarter revenue that missed estimates. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Salih, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. Stocks in Europe are mixed this morning with bank earnings in focus. Barclays reported results that topped estimates with a strong performance from its investment bank. Bloomberg's Danny Berger has details from London.
Barclays trading has really shored up some confidence. Equities trading revenue surging 35%, beating estimates. Securities unit, the division at the center of the CEO's growth plan, also outperforming. And investment bank spending has continued as well, which for other banks has been a weak spot.
Shares of Barclays are currently up about 0.5%.
Meanwhile, shares of Deutsche Bank are down about 4% after results that fell short of estimates. Joining us live from London with details on that, Bloomberg's Sebastian Salek. Good morning, Sebastian.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The German lender reporting its lowest third quarter revenue since 2010 today. It now predicts a slight decline for the full year after earlier guiding for a flat result. While cost cuts should help the bank post its first annual profit in 4 years, CEO Christian Zeving said the focus now has to be growing the top line without compromising controls. But for investors who have been through the bank's previous turnaround plans, it's a familiar pattern. Previous CEO John Cryan had vowed to restore controlled growth last year after raising fresh funding, but failed to deliver. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salek.
Bloomberg. All right, Radio. Sebastian, thank you. The krona is weaker after Sweden's central bank left its key interest rate unchanged. Here with more is Bloomberg rate strategist Richard Jones.
The Riksbank didn't change their guidance. They've kept it open to December or February. I think there were some in the market thinking that perhaps the Riksbank would actually now lean more towards a December rate hike rather than February. And so as a result, the krona is giving back some of its early gains.
And the Swedish krona is currently at 9.0806.
Here in the U.S., Federal Reserve Chairman Jay Powell is once again drawing criticism from President Trump. Bloomberg's John Tucker's here live with the details. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Nate. The president tells the Wall Street Journal in an interview he maybe regrets appointing Jerome Powell to the post of Fed chair. Mr. Trump says Powell almost looks like he's happy raising interest rates. The president sidestepped a question on what circumstances would lead him to remove Powell, saying, "I don't know." That contrasts with his response to a similar question October 11th when he answered, "I'm not going to fire him." Well, this all comes on the heels of Atlanta Fed President Rafael Bostic advocating for more policy tightening. Dallas Fed Chief Robert Kaplan was a bit more dovish, but agrees there should be another hike in December. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak. Karen.
All right, John, thank you. At 2 p.m. Wall Street time, we get another assessment of the U.S. economy from the Fed. Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice reports.
The Beige Book survey will help set the agenda for the Fed's November policy meeting. Economists will be looking for the impact of White House trade policy on the U.S. economy like this. In late September, Ford Motor Company CEO Jim Hackett reported that metal tariffs took $1 billion in profits and warned of more pain. Vinnie Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinnie, thanks. Wall Street awaits third quarter results from Tesla after the company pushed up its earnings report from next week to today. Shares surged 13% yesterday amid speculation CEO Elon Musk is in a hurry to share good news. Also, as Andrew Left of Citron Research said, he's no longer shorting Tesla.
I think being short going into this quarter, knowing that he just made earnings a week earlier, right on top of Ford's earnings, and knowing that the company's finally hitting stride with production of the Model 3, and I see the short interest, I'm like, oh no, that's just wrong.
Some traders and analysts are even predicting a profit for Tesla. The company reports results after the close of U.S. trading.
Semiconductor stocks are coming under pressure after disappointing earnings from Texas Instruments, the company, which has the largest number of customers and the broadest product range in the chip industry, warns that demand is slowing across many markets. Shares of Texas Instruments are down 5% in early trading.
Shares of ST Microelectronics are down about 9%. The company, whose customers include Apple, is forecasting no boost to profitability in the fourth quarter. This is Bloomberg. 7 on Wall Street. Let's find out more of what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael Barr.
Good morning, Nathan. Saudi Crown Prince Salman is scheduled to make his first international speech since the killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. He will address the Future Investment Initiative Summit in Riyadh. Meanwhile, President Trump described Khashoggi's killing as a bad job. The president, speaking to reporters last evening, says that Saudi Arabia's crown prince told him that lower-level operatives are solely responsible for the killing of the Washington Post contributor.
The execution was no good, and the cover-up, if you want to call it that, was certainly no good.
The U.S. is revoking the visas of some Saudi individuals suspected of being involved in Khashoggi's killing. President Trump has ratcheted up his verbal attacks on a migrant caravan moving through Mexico and towards the U.S. border. The president and his administration have been saying there are Middle Easterners mixed in with the caravan and mostly Central Americans. When asked if by Middle Eastern he meant terrorists, Trump said he has good information that there could be terrorists in the caravan. From a security standpoint, Secretary of State Pompeo says there is no proper accounting of who these individuals are, posing as unacceptable security risks to the U.S.
Where 1 million people per year are granted permanent legal status here in the United States. Over 33 million people total are currently here who have immigrated to this country legally.
White House and Kremlin officials say President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin plan to meet on the sidelines of a World War I commemoration in Paris on November 11th. Bloomberg's Ilya Hiprov has more from Moscow.
U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton had a 90-minute meeting with Russian leader in Moscow on Tuesday, concluding 2 days of lengthy talks with his aides. The meeting in Paris will be the first such encounter between the two presidents since July, when they met in Helsinki. The new agreement to meet couldn't mask continuing tensions between the former Cold War hosts. U.S. plans to withdraw from the Intermediate-Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, citing Russian violations of the agreement. In Moscow, Ilya Arkhipov, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Well, as now a tropical storm came ashore on Mexico's west coast as a hurricane last night. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thanks. It's 5:09 now on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashar.
Nathan, most figure the World Series opener in Boston would be a pitcher's duel, but neither Chris Sale or Clayton Kershaw had his best stuff. Both were gone before getting an out in the fifth inning. The Red Sox had taken the lead in the first with a pair of runs off Kershaw. Twice the Dodgers tied the game. Twice the Sox went back ahead, 3-2, then 5-3. And game one was put out of reach with Boston up 5-4. Two on, two out, seventh inning.
Check of the runners, the 1-0. Nooney swings it, drives one to left, high and deep by the wall. Gone! Three-run pitch homer, Eduardo Nunez. Can you believe it? And the Red Sox lead it 8-4.
And that was the final. Red Sox radio had it. Andrew Benintendi with four hits. J.D. Martinez had two run-scoring hits. Game two tonight at Fenway. At the Garden, the Rangers' first win of the season where they didn't need overtime. 5-2 over Florida. They're now 3-5-1. The new Rangers coach is David Quinn.
I mean, it's nice to score, you know. It's nice to win a game that, you know, you're not on the edge of your seat. Not that we weren't at 4-2, but, you know, it's just, you know, it's nice to overcome a bad first period. You know, quite frankly, we haven't had many bad nights. And when you think about our season so far, and we were kind of just talking about that, I mean, you know, we lose to Edmonton 2-1, we play pretty well. We beat Colorado, we tie Washington, and, you know, then we played pretty well against Calgary.
Two goals for both Matt Zuccarello and Mika Zibanejad. Has the Giants' house cleaning begun? Just back home from the loss in Atlanta, the Giants traded starting cornerback Eli Apple to New Orleans for fourth and seventh round draft picks. Apple wants the Giants' first round draft pick. Jets have multiple injured wide receivers. They've signed Rishard Matthews previously with Tennessee. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan.
All right, thank you, John. We're seeing the U.S.-China trade dispute take its toll now on an American icon. Prices for a baseball cap could rise 25% in January. According to the American Headwear Alliance, the vast majority of caps sold in the U.S. are imported from overseas. Of those, 89% came from China last year. This is Daybreak. It is 5:11 on Wall Street. Is volatility here to stay in the market? Put the question to Jeffrey Yu. He's the chief investment officer at UBS. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg Radio. Good morning.
Bloomberg Surveillance. This is Global News 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are extending losses and Asian shares are declining as investors' nervousness lingers after the latest bout of market volatility. European shares are bucking the retreat. The dollar is advancing with treasuries. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down about 22 points. Dow futures down 179. NASDAQ futures down 69. The DAX in Germany is up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 10/32nds. Yield 3.12%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.86%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.2% or 14 cents to $66.29 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.25% or $3.10 to $12.33.70 an ounce. The euro, $1.1424, the yen, 112.57. And today we're watching for reports on new home sales at 10 o'clock Wall Street time. At 2, the Fed releases its beige book. And 37 companies in the S&P 500 are scheduled to report earnings today. They include Boeing, UPS, and Ford. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Karen. President Donald Trump has threatened to declare a national emergency or rescind aid from the countries whose people are traveling north in the migrant caravan, but his administration hasn't settled on a plan should they arrive. Top administration officials also say that they're still evaluating the options in closed-door meetings. The winning numbers were drawn last night for the record $1.6 billion Mega Millions lottery jackpot, and it's reported that at least one winning ticket was sold in the Carolinas. Wasn't me. In the World Series, the Red Sox took Game 1 against the Dodgers, 8-4. They'll play again tonight in Boston. NHL, the Rangers won along with the Bruins. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Yeah, time to start making friends in South Carolina. Thank you, Michael. It's 5:19 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined now by Jeffrey Yu. He's the Chief Investment Officer at UBS. Thanks so much for joining us this morning as we look set for another day of selling off on Wall Street following a volatile session in Asia. What do you see driving the volatility?
I think a combination of things right now. You know, in some sense, it's good that this discussion about the Fed being overly aggressive and whatever is kind of in a shift is moving into the background a bit. But the short-lived rally in China, the Fed, things have been stabilizing a bit. So concerns over the situation in Europe and, of course, where we are in the cycle. So I think a confluence of factors. But, you know, that's just sort of probably the best way to describe it as, you know, diversified risk of version, which is somewhat preferable to one particular risk.
So where does that drive investors now? We see a lot of movement in haven assets, particularly treasuries and the yen.
So the yen is one position that we really still do like in our tactical asset allocation, for example, especially against like the Taiwan dollar. You know, you're a cyclically exposed and low carry, smaller currencies. We also hold an overweight in the 10-year, but we do think at the same time there's an opportunity to take on some risk as well. So it's a short dated Italian government debt. You know, that is a bit of a controversial position, but something we do favor, and also hard currency emerging market debt. There is some value there as well. So it's not doom and gloom across the board either.
All right. Well, let me dig into that a little bit more. Why do you see Italy as a possible bet for investors right now, particularly when the budget's headed back to Rome?
A, this is a very tactical view, and B, we need to make a distinction between what's going to happen in the shorter term, the financial elements, versus the medium to longer term political issues. So when we initiated this trade about 3 weeks ago, we thought we took into account Italy's credit rating is likely to be downgraded one notch, but still retain investment grade for the next 12 months, low probability of default within the next 2 years, and in terms of supply and demand, which is sometimes missed by markets. Only 13% of government bonds need to be rolled over by the end of next year. So that kind of supply and demand dynamic needs to be taken into account as well. So higher yields only gradually increase the cost of debt. There's not, let's say, a whole confluence of bullet payments in the short term either. So the recent sell-off, and it has been going on for a while, it's actually an attractive opportunity to own the front end, but we are staying away from long-dated, I think is the case with the rest of the market. So I think that's where we want to make a distinction between short and long stock and flow.
All right. And you mentioned bright spots in emerging markets earlier. Where do you see some of those bright spots particularly?
Yeah. Overall, we don't want to take any FX risk. That's why we're focusing on hard currency desk. And again, similarly, it's a bit of a stock and flow story as well. Many countries do have structural issues, from growth issues to balance of payments issues. But short-term financing is, adequate. And we do think that the dollar, may still have a bit of a flurry over the next few months or so. But as valuations really start to turn around, then that's where opportunities could start to come in as well. Not really ready to jump into the equity market yet. So, just focused on some of the safer assets for now. But I think on balance, even speaking to clients, I think most are talking about opportunities rather than worrying about further deterioration.
If a dollar continues to strengthen, does that pose a drag potentially on markets?
Yeah, so that is the concern, right? So if the dollar still has another, let's say, 5 to 10% across the board, then the tightening in financial conditions for emerging markets will have an impact, right? Because the yield play, for example, would see more flows going to the U.S. But at that point, it's going to be very difficult, for the Fed to, countenance that. There will need to be some form of a gentle pushback. If you look at, for example, how important dollar mix is, so the peso is to the U.S.'s inflation basket in terms of input prices, that is something they need to take into account, even though the U.S. is a bit more of a closed economy. Again, that's where we may see some adjustment further down the line.
In our last 30 seconds here, what are your expectations for the Beige Book coming out this afternoon?
So may I have to get back to you on that, actually. We don't really publish official views for it, but overall, the state of the U.S. economy right now, we think the Fed will be quite content with the situation, will be reflected in the Beige Book, it will be reflected across the board. The key is, where does inflation go from here? Headline and underlying, one thing we're watching in earnings is, are they start to see wages creep up, affecting margins, and I think that will have implications for policy further down the line.
Thanks for all this. Jeffrey Yu, Chief Investment Officer for UBS. Appreciate the insights this morning on Bloomberg Daybreak as we Continue to track the red for futures contracts. S&P futures down 20 points right now. That is a loss of 0.75%. Dow futures down by 0.2% or 168 points. NASDAQ futures down nearly 1% right now. That is a decline of 68 points. Price on the 10-year up 10 30 seconds. The yield 3.13%. Two-year treasuries at 2.86%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. JCF's donor-advised fund is the smart choice to manage your philanthropy. Open a JCF fund now to lock in a 2018 tax deduction. Visit jcfny.org.
As the Interactive Brokers Studio in New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. stock futures point to a sixth day of losses. A turnaround in China's markets helped keep the MSCI Asia Pacific Index from slipping into a bear market. European averages are mostly higher.
Earnings are in focus around the globe. Shares of Deutsche Bank are down more than 3%. Revenue is falling as the bank restructures.
Barclays shares are up almost percent. Equity trading revenue surged 35%.
Shares of Volkswagen also down 1% after warning that trade tensions are dragging down its business in China.
Here in the U.S., Wall Street awaits results from Tesla. The stock surged 13% yesterday after the company pushed up its earnings report from next week to today. Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger has more.
The electric car maker's third quarter earnings will reflect an auto operation that is much larger than it was in the prior third quarter. Deliveries and production will likely be up 200% year over year. And Bloomberg Intelligence says this means logistics will be added to the list of things such as pricing and margin challenges that investors are concerned about with all automakers. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Shares of Texas Instruments are down more than 5%. The chipmaker forecasts fourth quarter revenue below estimates. We also get earnings from Microsoft, Boeing, Visa, and AT&T today.
President Trump is once again heaping criticism on the chairman of the Fed. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the very latest. John.
Nathan, Mr. Trump tells the Wall Street Journal that Fed Chair Jerome Powell almost looks like he's happy raising interest rates. Yeah, that's too early to tell, but maybe he regrets appointing him. Trump last week called the Fed his biggest threat and blamed it for the stock market sell-offs during the past month. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak. Karen.
All right, John, thank you. This afternoon, we get another assessment of the U.S. economy when the Fed releases its beige book.
And in the euro area, growth momentum slowed to the weakest in more than 2 years at the start of the fourth quarter as manufacturers suffered from mounting concerns over global trade.
And futures this morning are lower. S&P futures down 21 points. Dow futures down 168. NASDAQ futures down 68. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. DAX in Germany's up 0.2%. CAC in Paris up 0.5%. FTSE 100 up 0.4%. 10-year Treasury up 10/30 seconds. Yield 3.12%. The yield on the 2-year 2.86%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.2% or 14 cents to $66.29 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $2.40 to $12.34.40 an ounce. The euro, $1.14.17 and the yen, 112.55. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's going on around the world. Michael.
Nathan, a caravan of Central American migrants briefly halted their long journey to remember a fellow traveler who died on the road. Thousands also got a chance to rest as they attempt to try to reach the United States. Thousands are at a makeshift encampment in a rain-soaked square in a southern Mexican town. Meanwhile, from a security standpoint, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says there is no proper accounting of who these individuals are, posing an unacceptable security risk to the United States.
I've spoken twice in the last 2 days to my counterpart, Foreign Secretary Videgaray. We trust that Mexico's leaders know what the best steps are to resolve this situation, and we urge timely action on their part.
President Trump doubled down on using the word nationalist to describe himself. The president, speaking to reporters in the Oval Office, says it's because he loves our country.
I am very proud of our country. We cannot continue to allow what's happened to our country to continue to happen. We can't let it happen. So I'm proud. I'm proud of our country. And I am a nationalist. It's a word that hasn't been used too much. Some people use it, but I'm very proud. I think it should be brought back.
The president called himself a nationalist during a rally earlier this week in Houston, Texas. President Trump says he will be briefed today by U.S. officials looking into the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi by Saudi Arabian agents. Trump said that he is passing responsibility to Congress for responding to the killing at a Saudi consulate in Istanbul, and he criticized the conflicting accounts from Saudi Arabia afterward as one of the worst cover-ups in history. UK Prime Minister Theresa May has lost control over her government after the cabinet reportedly descended into open conflict over her Brexit plans at a meeting yesterday. Bloomberg's Sandra Kilhoff reports.
According to people familiar, seven senior pro-Brexit ministers spoke out against plans to allow the UK to stay inside the EU's tariff regime indefinitely. May is said to have reacted angrily when other ministers then warned that Britain will crash out of the EU unless she's able to compromise. The Tory infighting is escalating at a critical time in the Brexit process, with talks still stuck on the issue of the Irish border. That said, four other cabinet ministers are said to have hit back, saying the government should not be imposing unrealistic red lines that will destroy the chances of getting a deal. In London, Sandra Kilhoff, Bloomberg Radio.
Global News 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thanks. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, a year ago, the Red Sox hired Alex Cora without any previous managerial experience. In his first season, he has pushed all the right buttons. In the World Series opener, Cora started lefty hitting Rafael Devers at third base against the lefty Clayton Kershaw. But in the seventh inning, when the Dodgers brought in another southpaw, Alex Wood to face Devers with two on, two out, and Boston clinging to a 5-4 lead, Cora inserted Eduardo Nunez as a pinch hitter. Nunez then golfed a line drive, three-run homer just over the Green Monster, rewarding Cora.
We talk about it today. You know, when he came in, probably he was a little bit disappointed that he didn't start, because he's been starting against every lefty. But we felt that Rafi was going to hang in there with Kershaw, and having him on the bench, it was going to pay off. You know, you got to keep a righty. You know, Pierce is playing. You know, Ian was playing. So keeping him in the dugout, you know, and out of the lineup was going to probably give us a chance to win the game, and it worked out.
The three-run shot put the Sox ahead 8-4. That was the final. Chris Sale went the first four innings, and then came six Boston relievers. Another postseason start for Clayton Kershaw, where he was not at his best. In four innings, charged with five runs on seven hits and three walks. The Red Sox, after 108 regular season wins, are 8-2 in the postseason. Game two with the Dodgers tonight. At the Garden, Rangers gave up an early goal, dominated from there, beat Florida 5-2. Two goals for both Matt Zuccarello and Mika Zibanejad. The Giants drafted cornerback Eli Apple in the first round in 2016. He got benched last year. His teammate Landon Collins had called him a cancer. Apple was playing better this season, but the Giants just traded him to New Orleans for fourth and seventh round draft picks. Meanwhile, Pat Shermer said there's no plans to play anyone at quarterback other than Eli Manning. With a Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanchell. Nathan?
All right, thank you, John. It is 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on Amazon's quest to win e-commerce in India. Also in this week's issue, a focus on Prada and how the luxury brand is planning a comeback. Stephanie Baker wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
Prada realizes now it should have started embracing all things digital, a coordinated social media campaign, as well as online shopping e-commerce sites globally. And I think both things really kind of held them back.
Read this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time right here on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. New Jersey's three remaining nuclear power plants are making money and need not be subsidized by utility customers to stay open. That's according to briefs submitted to a state agency this week. Critics of up to $300 million in annual subsidies say it makes no economic sense to close the Salem and Hope Creek plants in South Jersey. Greenwich private investment firm Starwood Energy Group is selling its remaining 51% interest in a pair of wind farms to the independent clean energy platform Skyline Renewables for an undisclosed price. Horse Creek and Elector Wind Farms are located in Texas. Bookmaker William Hill U.S. is suing the sports betting rival FanDuel for allegedly copying its How to Bet guide for customers nearly word for word. William Hill filed a copyright infringement lawsuit Tuesday in federal court in New Jersey. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thanks, Ed. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WCCO in Minneapolis, I'm reporting that Target is expanding perks like free two-day delivery as it looks to capture market share given up by Sears, Toys R Us, and others.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Ford has elevated its China unit to a standalone division, reporting directly to headquarters.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on speculation that a leadership challenge to Prime Minister Theresa May is close after an angry cabinet meeting descended into open conflict.
I'm Andrew O'Day on WBZ in Boston. I'm talking about Dunkin's new salvo aimed at Starbucks, reportedly rolling out new cheap espresso.
I'm Steve Podesk, and on WJFK, 106.7 The Fan in Washington, we're talking about earnings from locally based Hilton Worldwide.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. S&P futures down 19 points or 0.7%. Dow futures down 156. That's a 0.6% loss. NASDAQ futures down 65, a loss of 0.9%. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Marks Paneth LLP. Marks Paneth accountants and advisors have helped closely held and family businesses reach their goals for over 100 years. At Marks Paneth, success is personal. Learn more at markspaneth.com/success.
Bloomberg Markets.
I'm Lisa Abramowitz. Join me in my
Global News 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures extending losses and Asian shares declining as investors' nervousness lingers after the latest bout of market volatility. European stocks are bucking the retreat. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 18 points. Dow futures down 144. NASDAQ futures down 61. The DAX in Germany's up 0.4%. 10-year Treasury up 9/32. Yield 3.13%. Yield on the 2-year 2.86%. NYMEX crude oil is little change, down 3 cents to $66.40 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.25% or $3.10 to $12.33.70 an ounce. The euro $1.1420. The yen 112.62. More than 36 companies in the S&P 500 report earnings today. They include Boeing, and here with a preview, Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
The analysts surveyed by Bloomberg see the playmaker reporting adjusted earnings per share of $3.46 on revenue of $23.9 billion. Analysts at Bloomberg Intelligence say the monthly 737 build rate increased to 52 from 47, with better September deliveries partly offsetting low deliveries in July and August. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Charlie, thank you. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world.
Karen, President Donald Trump said he is passing responsibility to Congress for responding to the killing of Jamal Khashoggi at a Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Trump criticized the conflicting accounts from Saudi Arabia afterward as one of the worst cover-ups in history. It was reported that there is at least one winning ticket from last night's record $1.6 billion Mega Millions lottery jackpot. It's believed the ticket was sold in South Carolina. In the World Series, the Red Sox took Game 1 against the Dodgers. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thanks very much. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it is 5:49 on Wall Street. European bank earnings are in focus with results from Deutsche Bank and Barclays. Shares of Deutsche are slumping after the German lender posted its lowest third quarter revenue since 2010. Meanwhile, Barclays reported results that topped estimates. That has shares higher by more than 2% right now in London. For more on those earnings from Barclays, CEO Jess Staley sat down for a conversation with Bloomberg's neighbor Che Hitch and Manus Cranny. Here's what Staley had to say about the bank's third quarter results.
Well, I think obviously we're very pleased with the results of the third quarter. This is the second clean quarter for the bank. We have no legacy issues. Profits were up some 40%. We generated for the second quarter in a row earnings over 1 billion pounds clean. So that's a demonstration that the strategy of the bank is like well on course. In terms of the markets business, on a dollar basis, our markets revenue in the third quarter was up 19% year over year. That's the best performance of any bank to report thus far in the third quarter. We have gained market share in our investment banking market revenues four quarters in a row now, which I think demonstrates the return on the investments that we've made in that business. Let's not lose sight. Barclays UK also had a great quarter. It was positive jaws, positive earnings of some 2 billion pounds pre-tax. And so very good performance there. Return on tangible equity in Barclays UK was over 18%. This is also the third quarter in a row that Barclays as a group generated a double-digit return on tangible equity, which is what our goal is.
Talk to us about equities trading. There were quite high expectations of this in the market. So tell us how that performed.
You know, we've been doing well all year long on the equities trading side, from cash equities to trading what's called flow derivatives. We are launching new electronic trading platforms across the equities business over the course of this year. That's had a strong impact. We've got a new management team in place for that business, and that's doing quite well. So we've done well from credit to equities to rates, currencies. Again, we were very, very pleased with our market's performance, gaining market share by quite some margin in the third quarter.
Jess, this will naturally lead the market to a couple of questions. So let's clear the decks on a few of them. Obviously, Branson and Sherbon, does this strengthen your hand in pushing back at Bramson in terms of delivering better returns? Can you slap that activist investor down with these kind of numbers?
Well, again, you know, we obviously look at the profitability of the overall group. We generated an 11% return on capital in the first quarter, a 12% return on capital in the second quarter, and now a 10% plus return on capital in the third quarter. Part of that, you know, it's been across the businesses. You know, our consumer business in the UK has done very well. Our consumer business in the US has done very well. Our corporate business has done quite well. And the investment bank has done well. And as we've commented on before, the markets business in investment banking, i.e. trading currencies, rates, equities, et cetera, has generated a double-digit return over the last 9 months. And that's what you want to do. It's higher than the cost of capital. So we like the diversification of our model. We like the business mix that we have. And obviously, we're enjoying the profitability that we're generating.
And that is Barclays CEO Jess Staley discussing the bank's third quarter earnings results with Bloomberg's Neighbor Chehich and Manus Cranny. Checking shares of Barclays now, they are up about 2% in London. Karen?
Nathan, thank you. It is 5:52 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
U.S. tariffs on steel and aluminum imports are drawing fire from members of the World Trade Organization. China, the European Union, and Japan, among others, say those tariffs could hurt the stability of the steel and aluminum markets. The Labor Department's Mine Safety and Health Administration is acting as debt collector now. It's taken in more than $5 million in overdue fines from mine companies. And the nation's largest credit union will pay up to $25 million over improper fees to service member customers. A federal judge in California gave initial approval to the settlement involving Navy Federal Credit Union.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, in other legal news, we look at former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor announcing that she has been diagnosed with dementia. For more on this development, June Grosso speaks with Bloomberg News Supreme Court reporter Greg Storr.
Tell us about her legacy. Remind us.
Yeah, well, she, of course, was the first woman on the Supreme Court. She carved out a niche for herself on the court as the swing justice. She cast a huge vote in 1992 to reaffirm abortion rights that was a big disappointment to the conservatives who were behind her nomination by President Ronald Reagan. And she's also just kind of been a symbol of women's rights and the things that women can do. She has a very no-nonsense nature to her, a very matter-of-fact nature to her. She grew up on a ranch in Arizona. She famously, when she had breast cancer in the 1980s, didn't miss any time on the Supreme Court bench, and then she later advised Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg about how to handle chemotherapy and not miss any time on the court. So she's certainly a heroine, and as Chief Justice John Roberts said, a towering figure in American history.
And has she been very active in her retirement until now?
She had been. It's not in the last year or so so much, but she retired in 2006. She's been very active, in particularly in civic education. She founded a program called iCivics, which has some online games and materials that teach middle school and high school students about civics. And that was in her letter. That was what she stressed, is that work of getting Americans knowledgeable and active in civic affairs is crucial, and she very much hopes that will continue, even though she's no longer able to take part in it.
And I understand, I didn't know that retired Supreme Court justices still had offices, and she gave her office to retired Justice Anthony Kennedy?
She did. That was one of the symbols, one of the signals that she was stepping back. Yeah, so certainly an era has passed at the Supreme Court without her having chambers there.
And that's Bloomberg Supreme Court reporter Greg Storr speaking with June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law. Weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. Nathan.
Karen, thanks. 5:56 on Wall Street. The Bloomberg ETF report now brought to you by Oppenheimer Funds. Challenge the status quo with ETFs that adapt monthly to an ever-changing world. Find out more at OppenheimerFunds.com/ETFs. Here's Bloomberg's Pim Fox.
We all know the interest that investors have in video games, but now there's something else. There's wagering on sports. Here to tell us more is Eric Balchunas, ETF analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence. Okay, there's got to be an ETF for that as well, right?
Yeah, it's not exactly sports gambling per se. It's an esports ETF. So it's primarily investing in video games that do esports games, but it does have a broader mandate. The new ticker is ESPO, and it joins an existing video game ETF with the ticker GAMR. And GAMR is fascinating to me because it's had a great run, up 80%, crushing almost everything, and it almost has no assets. And the industry, the revenue of video games, is about double or triple robotics, and ETFs that track robotics have a ton of assets. I think a lot of investors blow off video games as, I don't know, childish or not real, but the numbers are there, and so now we have a second ETF that's looking to try to capture that growth.
I guess we could call it game on when it comes to ETFs and video games. Thanks very much. Eric Balchunas, ETF analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence. That's the Bloomberg ETF Report. I'm Pim Fox.
All right, Pim, thank you. And S&P futures are down 19 points. Dow futures down 149. NASDAQ futures down 62. And NYMEX crude oil is down 0.1%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg Radio.